Stay tuned for The Cinema Clash, as Maryland-based critics Charlie Jewell and Hannah Buchdahl debate the merits of new releases, from the mainstream movies that Hannah tends to favor to obscure foreign films that Charlie likes to champion. It's free-flowing, unedited conversation with an occasional wine wager. Two very different perspectives, one entertaining podcast. Let the clash begin.
Hello and welcome to this episode of The Cinema Clash. I am Charlie Jewell of charliejewell.com.
And I'm Hannah Buchdahl of chickflix.net.
We may have to keep our social distance from each other, but we could never keep our social distance from you.
That's right. Oh, do we have a beer? What is our beer of the day?
Check this out.
It is a dry-hopped Pilsner. The Pils are alive.
The Pils are alive. And it's from Champion Brewing Company. It looks like they're out of Charlottesville.
And so I don't know what that's supposed to relate to. I thought you were going to bring along like a really good apocalyptic beer.
Well, technically, you could say, hey, we're all still alive, right? For now, we're all still alive. But actually, I made a mistake.
Yeah.
You're going to talk about a film today called I Still Believe.
Mm-hmm.
And in my head, I could have sworn it was called I Will Survive.
No.
Because I saw the preview, and that girl doesn't look too good.
No, that is a stretch, yes.
No, I thought it was the other title.
Oh, I Still Believe is a faith-based movie, and so, yeah, the Pils Are Alive does not really cut it. Although I must say that I Will Survive, that song was in the soundtrack of a film that I did watch this week that... may or may not come out sometime in the near future, but I was very happy to hear that song. You blew it on this beer.
I did, but it actually tastes very good.
It's very good.
Congratulations, Champion Brewing. I actually really do like this beer.
Yeah, no, it'll serve its purpose for getting us through this particular podcast when the world seems to be falling apart around us.
It is. So actually, this is going to give everyone a chance to catch up on all their podcasts.
That's right.
We're going to talk about three films this week. And batting leadoff is one that I think has had certainly the most buzz of the three. And it's called The Hunt. The Hunt was supposed to come out 6 months ago in September. And it was riding this wave of notoriety. The tweeter-in-chief tweeted about it. He did not like the premise of the film. And then two mass shootings happened. So the studio, Universal, hit the pause button on it, and they delayed it 6 months, and it's now coming out today, this weekend. The Hunt, we have seen humans hunt other humans on the screen before. Most recently, The Hunger Games, Deliverance. I mean, they made the first adaptation of The Most Dangerous Game way back in 1935. We're used to this. The only reason this is different and gaining so many headlines is it's liberal versus conservative. It's political. Now, I know no one wants to go see another political movie. And yes, they use words like deplorables and snowflake and deep state. But it's horror comedy. It's so funny. It is over the top funny. Yes, it's horror because there's lots of gushing blood and skulls popping out of eyeballs and spikes going through torsos. But it's horror comedy. It's funny ha-ha blood. It's hysterical. You have liberal elites who have kidnapped a dozen conservatives that they think have harmed them, and they're going to hunt them through disgusting ways. And I'm really not going to go into much of the plot. There's so many surprises, and I really like what the director, Craig Zobel, did. He's an independent director. He did Compliance back in 2012. He did Z for Zachariah in 2015. That's an apocalypse movie, by the way.
Okay.
About a disease wiping out the human race.
Ooh.
Craig Zobel keeps us on our toes for absolutely the first half hour, because when you watch a movie, you know who the hero is. You know who you're empathizing with, who you're latching onto, and you're going to follow their character arc. Here, anyone can explode at any time. Who you think the hero is, who you think you're following, and there's some names in here. There's some names. You're like, oh, I know the guy. That's the hero. No, it's not. So it's very twitchy. It goes against traditional conventions. It's hilarious. I've never really seen anything like it. I borderline love The Hunt, Hannah.
Wow, that's amazing, because we kept our social distance over the past week or two with in terms of what screenings we went to. And so I did not go to The Hunt. Also, I was not in the mood for a horror movie with political overtones. Just wasn't there in that headspace. And so I went to one that you did not choose to see, and I really didn't know what I was in for, and very few of our fellow critics were at the screening for I Still Believe, and this one is squarely aimed at the faith-based crowd and fans of popular Christian rock singer Jeremy Camp. And
is that a real guy?
It's a real guy.
Never heard of that guy.
But he sold 5 million albums. So, you know, there are plenty of people in who are Christian music fans who are very well aware of Jeremy Camp and even of his story, possibly, because he wrote a song, what I guess they call a worship song, called I Still Believe. Mm. And he wrote that song really just 2 weeks after his young wife died. And so it is this film that's about his meet cute in college with this young woman. And then shortly after they got married, or even before she was married, I think she was diagnosed with cancer. And so she only survived a few months into their marriage. She was only like 21. And so it's, you know, she was his inspiration, and I guess she really felt that if her story could just touch, you know, like one life, if she had that legacy, that it will have all been worth it. And so it's very much about faith and hope and moving on. And so Jeremy Camp did indeed move on. He's now married to another singer, and they have 3 kids. But his current wife was really supportive of him doing this film because she was touched by his first wife's story and their relationship. And so it's, you know, it definitely is one of those meant to be inspiring films, but very, very heavy-handed on the God stuff.
Is it weepy?
It's, you know, it's not as weepy as I think it maybe could and should have been. I didn't feel there are moments just by the nature of the story. And the guy who plays Jeremy Camp does all of his own singing. It's this guy KJ Apa, who's I guess on TV's Riverdale. So he's really quite good and very talented. And then Gary Sinise is in it, and he plays Jeremy Camp's father. And so you have Gary Sinise, who kind of elevates the cast, I would say. But then as Camp's mother, you've got Shania Twain, country star Shania Twain, playing his mother, but she doesn't sing at all in this, and she's virtually unrecognizable. And so, in fact, it made it a very strange casting choice.
That don't impress me much.
Right. Well, and if they had had some reason for her to be singing, but some people were really shocked to even find out after the screening that was Shania Twain, because they did not recognize her. And so, you know, it just, you just wonder about the casting a little bit. While the young couple is good, and, you know, Gary Sinise has this very small role, Shania Twain has a small role, and you just kind of have that feeling that somebody just sort of, they were friends of somebody, and they did it as almost more of a favor and just to be involved in something that is faith-based. And it gets very, very heavy-handed, I think, with the preachy stuff. And so if you are already Christian or potentially a convert or a Christian rock fan, then absolutely this is going to be completely in your wheelhouse, and you are going to really be somewhat be moved by this story. And it's not for the rest of us that were there. It wasn't It was fine. It was just really just, I know you hate when I say it's fine.
Catchphrase.
My catchphrase. It was just fine.
It's fine.
But it's not, it could have been, it could have had somewhat broader appeal if it lightened up a little bit on the religious stuff, but that's what this is. That's what the story is. That's why Jeremy Camp really is put this movie out there. And so, I don't think you missed anything. I kind of figured afterwards that you would have hated it. It also had playing his young wife, Melissa, was Britt Robertson. And I was like, where do I know her from? And she was in The Space Between Us.
There it is.
Which was so
Another
bad.
Garbage movie.
So that one was so bad that I was like, all right, this one's at least better than The Space Between Us was. And so, you know, she does, you know, just an, oh, she's nothing all that memorable in her performance, but she's, you know, ever true to her faith, even in the midst of illness. And so it's just meant to be inspiring and hopeful, but at the same time, kind of revealing this path and the genesis of I Still Believe, of how that song came to be and the story behind it. And so, you know, it's a hope in the face of an aftermath of tragedy kind of film. And the two brothers who did this film were also behind, they did this one with Dennis Quaid, the Irwin brothers. So they created this 2018 faith-based movie, I Can Only Imagine, with Dennis Quaid. And so they've got a formula, and they absolutely stick to the formula in this particular film. I would call it plays a lot like a typical Hallmark movie. And so if you had like a very special episode of Touched by an Angel, God, that's what this would feel like. I half expected like Della Reese and Roma Downey to just kind of suddenly emerge from the sand and guide the story. So that's what you're in for. And so, you know, if you think about a slightly elevated Hallmark type of film, that's what you're going to get with I Still Believe.
I'm never going to see this movie.
No, you're not.
But it reminds me, actually, it's very similar to a movie from 2002 called A Walk to Remember, starring a very young Mandy Moore. And that's one of those Nicholas Sparks movies.
Right. And this is, that one is an excellent, I love that film, and with Mandy Moore. I mean, that's just a good sappy Nicholas Sparks movie. This one, you really are going to, this one won't appeal to the masses on the same level. It really has a built-in audience for that faith-based movie crowd. And those are the only people that I think would seek out this film and go see it and be perfectly content with what they've seen. Whereas A Walk in the Clouds was a much, you know, or Walk to Remember, which one was that? I'm getting it mixed up with also the Keanu Reeves movie.
Keanu.
The Keanu movie, which is also a good chick flick.
Well, for the people who do not like their movies in formula format, I saw the new Kelly Reichardt film called First Cow. Kelly Reichardt is famous in independent
That's
film
right.
circles.
I'm like, who?
Yeah, she's in, she is Old Joy, Certain Women, Night Moves, Meek's Cut Off, Wendy and Lucy. She is, I'm serious, she's very famous in independent film circles. The crowd I was with, I saw this at the new Kennedy Center Annex, which we have seen going up over a number of years, which is finally done. And they have a new theater in there, which is quite nice. First Cow is not contemporary. We're talking 1820 Oregon, and not even Oregon, we're talking Oregon country, back when no one owned Oregon. You think of frontiersmen, beaver trappers, like the guys from The Revenant before they got, you know, murdered by Native Americans, those guys. And then you have a man named Cookie Feigowitz. Cookie Feigowitz is hanging out in frontier Oregon country, and he's played by John Magaro. I really like him. He was in a wonderful film in 2013 called Not Fade Away. If you remember that, that had James Gandolfini in it. A lot of good tunes.
Oh,
but
yes, I do remember
that
one.
Great movie. John Magaro. And he strikes up an unlikely friendship with a Chinese immigrant, King Lu. And, you know, it makes a point to say, even back then, America was a melting pot, especially up there. You had, you know, Americans, British, French, Russians, Chinese. They were all hanging up there in Oregon country. And it's still very unsettled. they strike up a friendship, and because they're the two loners, they're the two oddballs, and they come up with a plan. The local, power arbiter, the local heavy hand, the local capitalist, really is what she's saying, imports the first cow. Because cows are not native to Oregon. In fact, cows are not native to America. They were all brought here. And the first cow is, and that means they actually have milk now. They didn't have milk before that. And they sneak onto the guy's land at night, and they milk the cow. And they start selling things that you can make with milk, and everyone's paying money hand over fist for these just little, like, fritters. They call them oily cakes. It's the lowest stakes heist movie you've ever heard of in your life. It's gorgeous. She shot it in 4x3, so it looks like a square. It feels old-fashioned. I love the performances. I love the feeling. Everyone knows Kelly Reichardt goes... She doesn't rush. She's slow. It's not boring slow, but she goes slow. She takes her time to watch things. When her 2011 movie came out, Meek's Cutoff, there was a huge... Especially in cinema circles, there was these huge articles. Everyone had their take on it, because one guy said, watching these movies feels like eating my cinematic vegetables. You know you're supposed to like it, but good Lord, it's cinema broccoli. And she's been kind of tagged with that, and I will defend her. She's gotten a lot better, especially with Night Moves. That was a lot of people, that's their least favorite Reichardt film, because it actually moves and does stuff, and Jesse Eisenberg blows up a dam. But here she throttles back a little bit. She's talking about the myth of the American dream. There never was one. Even way back in 1820, there was already a guy who owned all the capital and controlled things. Just because you have an idea and elbow grease doesn't mean you were just going to set up this enterprise and make money. That's the American dream. But no, even back then, it was a myth. She's talking about, like Parasite, she's talking about capitalism, haves and have-nots. There's a lot going on in this movie where you think not a lot is going on. For this crowd, for this independent film crowd, this Reichardt crowd, you're gonna love this movie.
Oh, and I believe that I was watching I Still Believe at the same time that you were watching Kelly Reichardt's Q&A and going to see First Cow. I think it actually happened on the same night. And so we had decided to divide and conquer, although you were never going to see I Still Believe, and I realized that. But I think you also knew that I was probably not the appropriate audience for First Cow. When I saw the movie poster and I just see the face of a cow and First Cow, I was thinking, hey, it sounds like one of those movies.
It's not about a cow.
Well, but that's just it. I would think that it was about some cow, like, you have the first dog.
And the cow's maybe not a metaphor either. So it's not,
therefore, I'm like, whatever.
It's just a pleasant film. It makes you think, because it actually starts in 2020. I think it starts in 1980 for like a couple minutes and then goes to the past. And it really just brings it all together and makes you think about what man has done to nature.
Which, I think at the moment, that just might not be what people are really all that inclined to go see. People need escapist fare right now, and they're not going to get any escapist fare for quite a while, it sounds like, because, I think you actually have a song for us, don't you? I feel fine.
It's not the end of the world. Although, we're just pressing the pause button. But if I was the owner of a boutique movie theater, not like AMC or Regal, I would be a little afraid.
Yeah, no. I mean, basically everything, all those big releases that we're just going to start rolling out in the next few weeks, all of them have been suspended, moved. To hear about Tom Hanks and Rita Wilson, I swear, I think all of a sudden everybody just suddenly felt like they knew somebody who had coronavirus now. And it was like, oh my God, you can't infect Mr. Rogers.
That makes it real.
It made it very real.
A wonderful tweet that someone said, coronavirus is acting like it's in prison. It got to the one guy you can't get to and said, look, if I can get to him, I can get to anybody.
It's true. And so you got to wonder, it's going to be very hard for a lot of those small theaters to recover. Hollywood, I think, will recover. The global box office will eventually recover. They're going to take a massive hit. But this could be good news in theory for the streaming services, when you've got people who are kind of stuck at home, they're going to be binge watching, they're going to be self-quarantining and watching potentially Netflix, Hulu, Apple Plus, Disney Plus. For all those films that are on hold, there's all these films that might actually get some additional attention and traction that they might not otherwise have gotten. And even these ones that a lot of these streaming, these links that we watch, they're very often for films that are right on the cusp. They're either meant to go to the streaming service immediately after or in conjunction with the theatrical release. And so some of those smaller indie films might actually benefit from the slowdown on the blockbuster releases.
Hollywood will be just fine. Yes, some productions are actually shutting down. Birds of Paradise was 6 days away from wrapping, and they shut it down. And the one you're hearing about, A Quiet Place 2, My Spy, Mulan, Fast and Furious 9, which is being delayed
a year
till April 2021.
What's up with that?
But movie theaters have yet, maybe will not, close. They're not closing. You can still go to your local theater, be it the gargantuan multiplex with 24 screens or the really tiny one-screen theater, and they're still showing films. NBC Universal, Amazon Studios, Sony Pictures, they're all saying work from home. Netflix actually shuttered one of its multiple Los Angeles buildings because someone in there had, you know, popped positive. They will be just fine, but yeah, Netflix is gonna, they're not smiling on the outside, but man, they're grinning on the inside. They are about to have a field day.
Well, and right now, the only film that is on target until we hear otherwise for a major release is the Trolls World Tour sequel that's coming out supposedly April 10th. So it'll be interesting if that does come out, because it could very well, if things have subsided, if this sort of experiment with social isolation works, and then people feel after March 31st or into that first week of April that they can start intermingling a little more again, then a family-friendly movie like Trolls World Tour could actually just be that, oh, fine, let's just all go to the movies and watch this silly, fun, animated film.
Yeah, by then, they're going to want to get the kids out of the house.
Yeah.
You know, so that's actually a shrewd move for the people behind Trolls to keep it for April 10th. They can still delay it. But just, you know, those independent films we're talking about, like The First Cows and the stuff like that, they're still going to release. There's still going to be films released next weekend when we're all inside, and the weekend after that when we're all inside. These tiny little films that show up at your local Landmark Theater are still coming out.
And Extraordinary from last week, people could still probably maybe go find that one. Wasn't that streaming? Was that going to be?
It's actually at our local Arclight Bethesda.
Yeah.
It had a screen there.
So, you know, it's tricky. I read one theater that had more than 250 seats was scattering. Like, they were making it so that everybody actually had to keep every other seat open. And so they were trying to keep a separation, more of a distance between patrons. So that's one way that I think some of the theaters are hoping to attack this. But I find it, I'm just relieved that the very last screening that I saw before all of this happened was My Spy. And whether it comes out in a month or 2 months or whenever it finally hits a screen, it was just that silly escapist fare that I was really just kind of relieved to see. I didn't need to see horror. I didn't need to see a movie where I'm eating my vegetables.
No, I wanted to escape. My last movie was The Hunt, and I guarantee you would have laughed. You would have done your standard turn your head to the side and fake like, oh, I can't believe I'm watching this. But you would have laughed your head off.
Yeah.
And just, you know, look, a peek of the tea leaves for our listeners. They have also canceled our screenings, our wide release screenings. So we're not going to see any of these either, just like you're not going to see them. So we can't talk about them. But we're still going to see all of those independent films because they're the ones that come as links on our computer. So if we do continue the Cinema Clash during our weeks of quarantining and what have you, stay tuned for those.
Yeah, I suspect you might see a few more of those than I will. And what I'll do is I'll just sort of look at what's streaming and recommend things that you can catch up on that you might have missed from the mainstream world. And then I'll watch, one or two of these indies and see how it goes and sort of take it from there.
You're going to watch your vegetables.
I will watch my vegetables.
All right. Well, a quick recap. If you actually do go out to the theaters this weekend, because I still believe it's still releasing in over 3,000 screens.
Yeah, I guess if you can't make it to church, then this is the movie to go to.
Everybody else go see The Hunt and make fun of the people going to still, you know, see I Still Believe, because they're not going to laugh nearly as much as you are.
Yeah, and maybe people will want that horror escape.
It is. It is. It's not. At least it's an, you know, it feels like an apocalypse movie, but it's not about disease. And First Cow, talk about a land of fresh and pure that has yet to be confronted with issues like viruses. So First Cow for everybody else, for the Reichardt fans out there. And I know there's more of you than people realize.
No, I saw the tweets about Kelly Reichardt. I'm seeing a lot of it. So even though I was not familiar with her name at all before, she obviously has a following too. So while the Jeremy Camp can go see I Still Believe, the Kelly Reichardt camp, they can go see First Cow, even though it has nothing to do with a cow.
Well said. Well, there's a cow in it. It just looks very confused. All right. Well, thank you very much for listening to The Cinema Clash. I'm Charlie Jewell.
I'm Hannah Buchdahl.
Thank you.
Take care.
The Cinema Clash with Charlie Jewell and Hannah Buchdahl is heard twice each weekend at 5:15 on Saturday and 12:15 on Sunday afternoon. Join us again next time for The Cinema Clash.